bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
It's the Pocket Show on the British Tech Network. Thank you very much for joining us again for our second episode. We are here with a fantastic panel of British Tech Network's finest to discuss everything that fits in your pocket. Much to Jeff's chagrin, we're only talking about mobile devices here. So, sorry, Jeff.
I love mobile devices. It's all good.
Jeff, how are you this evening?
I'm doing really well. Superb. Mobile devices and all.
Superb, superb. You, of course, are here to take on the hat of the iOS evangelist. Is that the correct word? Or enjoyer?
Let's go with enjoyer, because enjoyer. It sounds just slightly awkward when we say it.
So the iOS enjoyer is Jeff this evening. We also have the British Tech Network's own Sarah Gray. How are you this evening?
I'm very well, thank you, Paul, and looking forward to this.
Yes, yes, thank you very much.
First show on the network, first show on the Pocket Show.
Indeed. Thank you very much for joining us. So you of course, it'll come as no surprise to listeners that you are, of course, wearing the Android hat this evening.
Well, yes, I know. I mean, it's not going to be iOS, is it?
Rumour has it you have an iPad.
Someone in my house has an iPad, but only for another week, because it goes out the window.
Are you banishing it after next week?
Well, no, she's just bought a new Galaxy Samsung Tab 3, as a replacement for a 3-year-old iPad. So we're still going to keep the iPad. I'm going to use it for Safari testing and things like that, but it's not going to be a mainstream device.
Okay. You're going to kind of stick pins in it and things like that?
Not quite. I do need it for testing Safari, but maybe one day when it finally gives up the ghost, then that might happen to it. So.
Yes, okay, very good. And finally, we have a gentleman breaking his podcasting cherry this evening. Is Alan Houshel. How are you this evening, Alan?
Very good, thanks.
Good. And you, of course, will be taking the role of our Windows or Windows Phone person or Surface or... pretty much a variety of different brand names that Microsoft's rolled out.
Yeah, I'm willing to, be the unpopular one on the Microsoft side.
For those of you who maybe don't know Alan, you may remember him from the Bash this year as being the gentleman who was trying to teach Will Green how to use a Surface.
Successfully,
yes, yeah. Yeah, so it went quite well. So straight on to the headlines. First of all, to start off on a Windows story, too much demand broke limit on the Nokia Design Seminar. Now, there's possibly a little bit of a temptation to make some jokes around that there, but this basically was a design seminar, as the headline suggests, that there was far too much demand for, which I was a little shocked when I read this. Alan, what's your thoughts on this one? Is this a massive event that I've just never heard of before?
Well, it was a free online webinar. Originally, they sort of set it up for an attendance of 500 people, and that's the limit they broke through, which, to be fair, 500 isn't bad for developers in a room. And then they've basically, because of that, went and reset up a second event that was sort of, Saturday morning, early Friday morning. Mm-hmm. And I believe that one was pretty well attended too. So, yeah.
That's very good, very good. Was that mainly covering, was it kind of app design, or was it kind of more into the visual design element of it?
A lot of it was visual design and, getting to grips with the Metro language. I think also because there was a bit of crossover, obviously, between Windows 8 and Windows Phone, Nokia's obviously got their Windows tablet out now, so... good opportunity to get some design and UX free advice. Mm-hmm. And there was also, some wonderful prizes available as well.
Okay. Yeah, trying to get rid of some of that extra stock of Surfaces.
That's very cynical.
It's Nokia, not Microsoft. They wouldn't have spare surfaces.
Oh, that's
yet.
True. That's very true. Yes. Yes. No, actually, most of the Nokia devices. Ewan has a Nokia device, and he speaks very highly of it. So that was very wrong of me to poke fun.
It's hard not to do that with Microsoft sometimes.
Samsung and Google have apparently signed a patent deal for 10 years. This doesn't appear to be the entire patent portfolio, obviously, but an interesting development nonetheless.
I think that is in light of the other big story in the Android world this week. Mm. I don't think that's a complete surprise, and I'm sure that there is a link between the two stories.
I think there's posturing here.
Sorry, Jeff.
Oh, I think the Samsung Google patent deal, it's posturing, because if Samsung is using Android as the operating system for its smartphones, mm-hmm. why does it need to license all these patents separately from that?
I didn't think about it like that.
My suspicion is that there was some negotiation between Google and Samsung, and part of the deal was Google said, we're going to get rid of Motorola because we understand your concerns that we're doing, that we're manufacturing phones as well as manufacturing the operating system.
I'm sure that talk happened. Yeah.
This is why I think that the stories were linked. And I think part of the deal, from what I hear, was also Google saying to Samsung, you know, we're very concerned about the fact that you're filling your phones up with crap software that people don't want. And we would prefer that you give them the vanilla Google experience. And if we are going to get rid of Motorola and no longer manufacture phones, do you think you might be able to do that? And I think that was part of the deal as well. I know the deal was about patents, but I'm sure that there's lots of other, whatever you want to call them, as part of the deal.
Yeah, I think the third part of the story in there, as you're right, Sarah, was about also this possible going away of Google Nexus and instead Play editions, i.e. sort of bare bones Android editions on Samsung and other handset manufacturers. Mm.
Yeah. Well, I'm obviously hoping that that's what Lenovo will continue to do with the Moto range. I assume that they're going to keep that brand in place.
With the cachet that brand has. You kind of hope that was kept around, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be that the way I think it ideally needs to be is Google need to focus on Android, the operating system and the features in that, mm-hmm. and Lenovo and Samsung need to focus on the features on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. And if they can do that and just make sure that the devices continue to support vanilla Android, mm-hmm. so that they can do upgrades a lot quicker and we can get the features that Google provide, then everyone will be happy.
Yes, yeah. And so
apart from maybe not the airtime providers, but we don't really care about them. It's about the hardware and the software, isn't it?
Yeah, sooner or later they'll just realise that their role in life is just to be the dumb pipes between all of our different worlds.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sooner they can do that, the better. So as we've alluded to there, the other headline on Android was Livono buys parts of Motorola to own the enterprise mobile market. In the tech industry, or the mobile industry, I should say, this last week, Apple has supposedly fixing the iOS black screen of death in the latest update.
Oh, please.
you know, the funny thing about this is I hadn't experienced the black screen of death until the update that came out last week, which was 7.0.5, I think. And I have had three different black screens of death since that update came out. So is this something that you're getting quite a bit, Jeff?
I've been experiencing this ever since iOS 7 was released.
Right, okay.
And so I'm experiencing it on an iPhone 5S. Mm-hmm. I experienced it on a third generation iPad.
Right.
And I'm also experiencing it on an iPad Air and an iPad Mini. It's very consistent. I have at least one device crash like this every single day.
Right. That at least stops Apple from blaming it on the hardware. I know it's all Apple, but even so, it still it means the common factor has to be iOS,
iOS 7, yeah.
Yes, because it's been different processors across the board.
Yep. Now, I had this a lot at the very, very beginning when I put the very first beta of iOS 7 on my phone when I was doing testing way back, back last July. I had a huge amount, but I just sort of accepted it because it was a beta. And then eventually, it wasn't for prime time, so I moved back to iOS 6. And as I say, I've not experienced this at all. And I have to admit, I hear a lot of people talking about it and kind of thought, is this maybe being blown out? But from your account there, Jeff, it clearly isn't. It's actually a big issue.
It's definitely an issue. Yeah. I know a lot of people that suffer from this. And when... I'll be out in public with people that all have iPhones as well, and I know exactly when it's hit someone else because they'll. Do we have a family friendly tag on the show?
To a degree, yeah. Just okay. Don't say like
that.
I won't say.
I won't say what everyone says, but it's very consistent about what it is they are damning.
Right. And, okay. Yes.
Yeah. So I'm seeing this not just on my stack of iOS devices, but on a lot of other people's too.
Okay. Nokia says Lumia sales have dropped in quarter four and supposedly preparing for the Microsoft sale. It was 8.8 million quarter three versus 8.2 million in quarter four. What's your thoughts on this one, Alan? I mean, is this maybe just... Is it exactly as it says? It's just people are kind of avoiding it because of the Microsoft sale? Or is it maybe a Nokia isn't necessarily the phone of choice that would maybe be for sale in the Christmas quarter?
I think it's probably partly an excuse in that I would have expected, and the industry guys were expecting them to do 10 million in quarter four, in that fourth quarter. So I think it's a bit surprising, especially as, I've certainly seen and keep seeing more and more Windows phones around. Mm-hmm. They seem to be selling well, and there's lots of buzz about particularly how things like the 510 and the 520 and the 620 are really sort of gaining lots of sales. But, you can't really be too upset with 8 million. You'd like it to be more. I think the number of people aware of the upcoming Microsoft sale outside of these small techie circles is going to be pretty minimal. So I think it's got to be more to do with market. And, to be fair, they had more new handset releases in quarter two and quarter three than they did in quarter four.
Right, okay.
Really, and the quarter four releases were more high-end phones rather than low-end phones. Mm-hmm. So new models always drive sales.
Of course.
Don't have new models, you dip a bit.
Yep.
I'd say when you consider that it's very much an iOS... an Android market, and the Android itself is fragmented into so many different phones, that is fairly good results.
Mm-hmm.
8.8 million, I'd say that's pretty good. And 8.2 in Q4.
Especially when you consider it's an increase year on year as well in those same quarters.
Yeah.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as I say, it's very impressive. They're still having trouble getting America behind Windows Phone, in that there it's still sort of, it's only sort of 4.5% of the market share.
Okay.
But in Europe and Australia, it's cracked the 10%. In Italy, apparently, and quite a lot of other countries, it's, second choice OS after Android. Ahead of iOS.
Wow.
Yeah, in the United States, Microsoft might as well not even be selling Windows phones.
Really? Wow.
It's a two OS game right now, and that's iOS.
How ironic is that? How ironic is that? Considering Microsoft's a US company.
Yeah. That is interesting. I certainly see, just kind of going about my day-to-day, that I would say it's probably a kind of a... two-fifths Android, two-fifths iOS, and one-fifth Windows Phone that I see kind of kicking about. They definitely are increasing over the... I've definitely noticed a significant increase in the amount of Windows Phones I see just, in the train on the way to work and things like that, and in the office over the last sort of year and a half, definitely. And I think it's a good thing. There's always.
Do you think that's got?
Sorry, Sarah?
Do you think that's got anything to do with the predominance of Microsoft Windows in the office environment? That tends to mean that the large, maybe a large amount of that is the fact that businesses are giving out when they're providing phones to their users because they're Windows on everything else. They would tend to prefer to where they are predominantly Windows. They will give out Windows phones.
I think it's more to do with the networks. I just think the US big networks still aren't pushing or encouraging, you know, people into Windows Phone or doing the right incentives. Mm-hmm. Whereas I've seen some really good offers over in the UK, you know, on different networks for Windows phones.
Yeah,
and, yeah, you know, I meant people do Europe, care about monthly costs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I meant predominantly in Europe rather than in the US. Obviously, that's not happening in the US. But yeah. I'm just wondering if that's the reason why there's so why it's doing so well in Europe. In Europe,
I believe it's all consumer driven. I haven't seen that many big announcements of, you know, large scale corporate adoptions of Windows Phone yet, because ironically, Windows Phone didn't have. Not until the next big Windows Phone update does it have things like corporate VPN support and things like that that the enterprises are waiting for.
Yeah, certainly in the organizations that I deal with, which are mainly big financial houses and banks and things like that, and the phones that they're given, if they're given phones at all, are BlackBerries, and generally anybody else that has a device that they use for their day-to-day is an iOS device using software like Good. Which is a kind of a secure emailing client that's on iOS and Android. And it generally...
And Windows Phone.
Or does Windows Phone have Good as well? I didn't realise that.
Yeah, I use it for corporate email in BT.
Right, okay. I think mainly the iOS element of it, I think, is driven by the kind of the board. The board has been... Somebody on the board has been given an iOS device or an iPad or something like that, and they just want their email to work on it or their access to the intranet to work in it or something like that. But, Phone in the workplace, I haven't seen a huge increase in at all, in the sense of a device you use for work, I should say.
Sure.
Yeah. While we're talking about... earnings and things like that. Of course, Apple had their earnings call last week. It was, on the face of it, it was very good results, but unfortunately, the market doesn't appear to have agreed with that too much. So 51 million iPhones sold in the quarter, which was a record, but market didn't like that. They also updated their guidance for the next quarter, which is down on expectations, and their gross margin is down year on year as well, which is it's huge sums of money and huge amounts of devices going, but unfortunately the line is going in the wrong direction, it would appear.
Well, it's not so much the line is going in the wrong direction, because the numbers are going up, and having year-over-year flat guidance right now makes sense because of where Apple's product mix is, mm-hmm. and where we are in the consumer buying cycle. So we're out of the Christmas holiday, and so people typically buy a lot less in the current quarter. So that's all normal. Overall, Apple's numbers are up. The real problem is that investors and analysts were projecting numbers that were higher than Apple gave, both for what they earned in Q1 and for their Q2 guidance. And because Apple is giving numbers that are below what they wanted to see, Apple stock gets punished.
Yes.
And when I'm saying their stock gets punished, I'm not saying it in like an angry, why are these people hating on Apple? Because that's not what I mean. What I mean is the stock price takes into account the expectations of the analysts.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so when Apple reports what they really did, which was really good, it wasn't in line with the higher expectations that analysts had. Therefore, investors drive the stock down after. Yeah. But this happens after every Apple's earnings report. Their stock drops. Mm-hmm. And then people they pick it up at a reduced rate compared to what it was, and then the stock starts climbing back up again. it's a very easy to follow pattern. It's also very fascinating to follow.
I think the problem with Apple is that the market is expecting, you know, that when they brought out the iPod, then the iPhone, then the iPad, it was, wow, you know, the great devices and stuff like that. And in terms of the numbers and the amount of revenue they're going to create, the market had very high expectations, and they've been very revolutionary in terms of creating things, but in terms of being able to bring it to market and making huge amounts of revenue. And there's this big expectation with Apple that they're going to come up with the next big thing, and the market's still waiting for that. So, you know, when we see the numbers start to dwindle, that's not really a surprise, to be honest, because they were still waiting for the next big thing. And I think with investors, it's like, you know, okay, Apple, great, you still got that, but you're living on the past. Why aren't you bringing something out now that's the next big thing? That's what you're known for, and you're absolutely number one in terms of bringing something new to market and making people want that device and have it, and therefore producing huge revenue. We're not interested in what you've done. That's great. We're interested in what you're going to do next.
Yeah. And
that's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a problem that falls on the shoulders of investors, the public, and Apple. Because if you look at the rate at which Apple has rolled out new game-changing products, it's not that often. Mm-hmm. But people have this perception that it is. And Apple doesn't do anything to correct that perception. So we all have this idea that every 18 months or so, Apple's going to shake up a whole new market with a revolutionary new device that no one has ever conceived of before. And they don't do that. And Apple doesn't do anything to correct that assumption. So, yeah, so Apple is definitely to blame for part of this. But then everyone that gets wrapped up in the hype they get to share some blame too.
Yeah, yeah. And I think from the stock market's point of view, unless you're a day trader, everybody who's buying stock is buying stock because they think they like the future of the company. So stock price is going to go down if you're starting to doubt the future of the company, if you're not 100% that they're going to actually bring something interesting out in the next 6 months. So, Windows, again, a slow uptake on the latest Windows Phone update. So is this the Nokia Blacks?
This is people mostly been talking about it in terms of Nokia Black because of the Nokia dominance. But the actual TechCrunch story was about the GDR3, the Microsoft software general development release 3 update. Mm-hmm. TechCrunch's story was actually wrong on this one, right, in that GDR3 was only actually released to as a selected developer preview in October 2013. Mm-hmm. It actually only officially started rolling out for most devices on 9th of January.
Okay.
So given this one was the percentage of phones with GDR3 in January, and it was posted, I think, you know... just trying to see when it was posted again. The post is on the 26th of January.
Right.
So, okay. You know,
a couple of weeks.
15, 20 days after Nokia started rolling it out worldwide.
Yeah. Tell me, I'm unfamiliar with how Microsoft do the rollouts. Is it more in the Apple way of dealing with updates, or does it do more in the kind of the non-vanilla Android way, so like your Samsung Android, where you have to kind of wait for the carrier to push it down?
It is more the Android way, where you've got the three steps. You know, Microsoft releases the OS base, and then your handset manufacturer might decide to release some firmware updates on top of that and added features, and then you've got to wait for the carriers to actually approve it to get down to your device. The only shortcut that Microsoft has done is with GDR3, there is actually an official Microsoft app called Preview for Developers that you can download free. There's a way to make yourself a developer for free, and you can look up that, no problem. But if you sign into that, that would mean that you do get GDR3 as soon as it's released, i.e. in October, not in January. Mm-hmm. But you won't get the Nokia stuff and the add-ons until obviously Nokia are happy to release it.
Okay.
That's still a problem that they've got to figure out. I mean, going back to what we were talking about earlier with, you know, Google wanting the phone manufacturers with Android to stop putting their own crud on there. Sounds like Microsoft have got to have that conversation with Nokia and others about doing the same thing.
But is that's an ongoing thing that Microsoft's had to deal with for years. I'm not saying that that's okay.
Oh, yeah. You know, HP are particularly bad. Laptops.
I mean, I will say that actually Nokia's been improving the situation for Windows Phone in that they seem to have much better connections with the network providers, and they're forcing the network providers to release the updates a lot sooner. I had a Windows Phone 7, and sometimes the rollouts after they were publicly released would hit my handset 6 to 9 months because of T-Mobile delaying and not bothering to test and release. Whereas now Nokia is getting it down to generally everyone gets it once they say they're ready in 4 to 8 weeks.
Okay. Those pesky worldwide. Carriers.
4 to 8 weeks? Jeez. Holy crap, that's unacceptable.
That's ridiculous, isn't it?
But as a developer, and I'm not saying this is a solution by any means, but as a developer, are they then able to still fast track that so they can kind of get it and just accept any problems that might be with the device?
You can't fast track yet the Nokia stuff. Although if you are on the developer preview for the Microsoft side, as soon as Nokia opens the floodgates, you will get the Nokia stuff immediately. Right. And also, you'll also immediately get the stuff if you're running an unlocked handset.
Okay.
Whereas obviously, if you've got a locked handset from a network, that's when you end up at the back of the queue.
Right, okay.
So if you're on Windows Phone and you can possibly try and get an unlocked handset to get your up, if you care about the latest updates.
Indeed. So this next Android article I find quite interesting, that some UK car phone warehouse stores to become Samsung stores. That seems quite interesting, being the car phone warehouse. Sorry?
Car phone warehouse must be selling off some of those stores because, you know, I mean, it's not like, I know that, you know, Samsung produce devices in all sizes and, you know, for all uses and stuff, but car phone warehouses aren't exactly filled with just Samsung kit, are they?
They're not at all. No, they sell everything. I mean, that was part of their strategy, really, wasn't it, to begin with?
Yeah, so I mean, that's got to be the car phone warehouse for actually selling off some of those stores.
I mean, Samsung's tried this before. They tried to emulate, I will say, as opposed to copy, emulate some of the Apple experiences in the past. So this just seems like a slightly different angle for it now.
I'm not so sure it's a good idea, but
I mean, does Samsung have the same have that kind of impact in the same way that Apple does? As in, you want to buy a Samsung phone? I mean, for me,
no.
My feeling is that I would want to buy a Galaxy phone. I think there's more brand in that.
The Apple brand is way, way stronger than any other phone, tablet, manufacturer device. Right. I agree with you, Paul.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you know, if you want your product to stand out against Apple's, doing a store-in-a-store type setup is probably a really smart thing because it creates, at least I'm assuming it does, I'm assuming it creates kind of that feeling of oh, this is like Apple because they have store-in-a-store setups in certain areas. Therefore, this must be cool and really good like Apple. Mm-hmm. Plus, if you have one brand that's set aside with a store and a store type setup, it's a lot easier for people to find those products, which means there's a higher likelihood people will buy those products.
Yeah,
I think that's certainly a possibility. But I just wish that these manufacturers would all stop trying to copy Apple. I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. But Apple have got a unique brand with unique set of products, and they do know how to market better than anyone else. And, you know, I wish Samsung and whoever would just say, okay, fine, we're going to do something different instead of just trying to follow Apple and be Apple. because it really doesn't help, you know, the market. It doesn't encourage, you know, development and innovation.
I agree completely. It would be nice to see other companies coming up with the really cool ideas for whatever it is. And I think the last time Sound tried, we ended up with the Galaxy Gear Watch.
Yes.
Yeah. So maybe in Samsung's case, they are better off waiting to see what Apple does and then copy it.
Yeah, I'm not just talking about innovation. I'm also mean from a marketing point of view as well.
Yeah, but I mean, on the watch thing, I don't think that was necessarily, I mean, it was a bad thing, but it wasn't necessarily an awful direction to take, because they're at least trying things and getting it out to market. I mean, there's that kind of jokey thing that is sort of half true, is that Samsung sort of does Apple's market research for them. You know?
Yep.
You know, they are trying stuff, and sometimes they won't work, and sometimes they do work, and you know, I don't know if it's necessary. I think they are copying them, certainly with these stores and things like that, and following them up with some of the other things that, you know, are going through court cases and things like that. But I like the idea that Samsung just throw everything out, and lots of other manufacturers, not just Samsung, throw lots and lots of stuff out, and maybe the innovation is hidden amongst the noise. You know, it's kind of can't see the wood for the trees. I don't know. Is that a silly idea or?
Well, I don't know. I don't see it. And okay, they're not going to, you know, there's not as much of song and dance as when Apple released something. Mm-hmm. I just wish that they would all stop trying to copy each other and, you know, tread on each other's toes. Oh, you know, you nicked our patent for that, blah, blah, blah. And then end up giving a load of money to lawyers instead of actually just saying, okay, fine, what can we do to create the next big thing? Mm-hmm. You know, and Apple are really good at that. And hell, let's see Samsung or LG or Nokia or whoever do something like that. Maybe Lenovo will.
Yeah. So speaking of the next big thing, iOS in the car has had a document leaked. Now, iOS in the car was...
It's a scary thought.
iOS in the car was announced at WWDC in the summer. And there's not really been much about it since then, but MacRumors has a document, leaked iOS in the car screenshot, sorry, not document, kind of showing maps and sort of potentially Siri-like functionality, and certainly Wi-Fi connectivity based on the icons and things like that. I sort of sit on the fence with this. I don't know what, Jeff, as another iOS user, what's your thoughts on this iOS in the car, Palava?
I'm okay with it, but that's because I can see where this has a potential to be something really cool, not just for iPhone owners, but for like Android users, Windows users, because eventually we'll see the same type of tight integration across other devices. But I really like the idea of having a system where my smartphone is essentially the computer for the car.
Yes.
And so every time I get a new phone, my car just got upgraded.
Mm-hmm. I like that. But from what I can tell from this, it's connected into your phone, but it's still iOS in the car. I don't know if that's necessarily what you're meaning there. What I would prefer is that it's sort of an agnostic internal thing that can deal with Android, Windows, iOS, a Symbian for argument's sake.
That would be awesome on the surface, and it would suck so bad. It would be horrible. No one would use it.
Yeah.
If it's not tailored for the operating system on your smartphone, it's going to be crap. And it doesn't matter what operating system it is. It would just simply be crap. And that's because to make it agnostic, you have to take it down to the lowest common denominator. And it also means the people that are going to design the interface for this are probably people that can't carry on a conversation in public without severe anxiety. So how are they possibly going to make an interface that you have to interact with all the time? And it's going to be something that the average person is going to be comfortable using.
Okay, well, what if it's not the interface that they're designing? And essentially all cars come with a 4x3 touchscreen, and that's it. And it just talks to your phone, and all that connectivity happens through the phone. Or perhaps you have to. There's a manufacturer, and I was looking for cars last summer, and I remember one of the. I forget who it was. And you basically had to buy a box that was sort of the bit that talked between your phone and the car. And that box was OS specific, but it meant that you weren't kind of pinned down to an iOS. So for example, here with this iOS in the car, it's going to be limited to manufacturers, including Audi, BMW, Acura, Chevrolet, and Honda. But what if I have a Volkswagen and I want to use iOS in the car? These are the issues that I have with it. And even if
what about if I've got an Audi, a BMW, or whatever that's got iOS in the car, and I've got an Android phone? Well,
exactly, yeah. Yeah, so there is...
You can't have it specific. This is the thing that annoys me about these devices out there that have got iPod or iPhone docks. Mm. So I've got an Android phone. Yeah. I don't want a 30-pin connector thing. I want something that can handle, micro USB.
Yeah. The other thing that I don't get about this whole car thing is... Now, I'm just going to pull a stat out there because I faintly remember somebody telling me in the past, which may be complete nonsense. And Jeff, maybe you'll be able to tell me if this is at least ballpark accurate. Apparently, the life cycle for a car in the States is above 10 years. Is that right? Or years, damn it?
That wouldn't surprise me at all. Mm. The number of older cars that are on the roads here is extremely high. Part of that is the environment. Because once you get away from the East Coast especially, you don't have the high moisture and salt content in the air, so you don't have cars rusting out.
Okay.
And like the car that I'm driving right now is a Volvo C70 from 1998.
Wow. Right, okay. I'm maybe going to make quite a broad sweeping statement that may upset some people, but you just don't see cars that age very often on the roads in the UK anymore.
Yeah.
But I think he said, hasn't it? It's the moisture and salt content in our air.
Perhaps. But if you've got that kind of life cycle in cars and you're having to buy a new car to get the newest update for iOS in the car, I can't see how this is going to work. Or it's not going to get that much of an impact.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of new cars being bought. Don't equate... There's a lot of old cars on the road with people aren't buying cars because the number of new cars that are being bought is just crazy. Mm-hmm. But then there's also opportunities for aftermarket solutions. Like what I've done, because my car is old enough. It has a cassette player built into it.
Okay.
No kidding.
Mine does too.
Yeah, so it has a 3-disc CD changer thing where it's all mechanical to actually switch between the 3 discs and a cassette player. But the speakers are fantastic. But that's not the point. The point is I wanted to have newer technology for interacting with my various devices built into my car. So what I did was I got the Magellan smart GPS. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it's called. I'm embarrassed. I can't remember. Smart something. I think it's smart GPS. Excuse me. And so it has the Magellan operating system on it, but then it links to my iPhone through Bluetooth. And now I have an internet connected device in my car all the time. And it's sending information back and forth between it and my iPhone. So I have a very sophisticated GPS and all kinds of other information type system in my car, and my car was made in 1998.
Okay. So there's possibly some kind of aftermarket thing that could be done there. You don't see that so much, and again, I'm basing this entirely on UK cars here, but you don't see so much with the ability to add and remove panel areas as you did perhaps in cars in the 80s and 90s.
I think that's the way it's going to have to go for this sort of innovation, though.
I agree, yeah.
I think the interface into the car systems has to come from the car manufacturers. And they come
with
a module that you plug in for iOS, for Android, for whatever, you know, you just interchange that module, which is the interface part. And when you buy the car, or you know, or you buy it as a secondhand car, you can take it to a car, that car dealer, and they can change that part if you're using a different operating system or whatever. And then you just plug your device into the top, in the, like I was saying about with the dock, but you, we would just come with a different dock. Or we have it so that it's not just about the connector, it's about the actual interface so that it works with, which then also presents the opportunity that if the car comes with that as a, you know, with the car based system in it, with just this module, if they do upgrade it, you just go to a Ford dealer or Audi dealer or whatever and say, can I have the latest module, please? And you buy it and plug it in.
That was what I was meaning before, that and I wish I could remember the manufacturer that I was looking at, but they did that, and it was this different, it was for the sat nav, and it was different modules that you basically plugged into this little dock in the dashboard, in the glove compartment, and that was exactly how it worked. You changed the different ones for when you were going to a different country. That was how it worked. It was
That's the sort of principle I had. The only thing is, of course, is that being cynical about car manufacturers, they won't make it easy so that the dealers can actually make a fortune out of charging you the money for actually doing the upgrade.
Yeah, or they're able to throw it in and make it out as if it's a massive, massive deal to you.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I used to be a car salesman. I know all those tricks. I did that for 9 months sins.
They've got to keep their dealer network in business, haven't they?
Indeed. Yeah, so we're pleased to have a new sponsor with British Tech Network. If you were listening to the big show the other night, you will have heard Ewan talk about Network Union. They're providing us with their BT Business Fibre Broadband to BTN Towers. So we want you to support them because they're supporting us to help the network grow. They're an authorised partner of BT, licensed to sell the BT portfolio business-to-business products. There's a few services they're offering BTN listeners. If you're working within a business, like an IT manager or something like that, any part of the decision-making process, and you're familiar with all sorts of awesome connectivity services such as MPLS, VPLS, Ethernet point-to-point, internet leased lines, IP telephony, so on and so forth. Network Union are able to propose the BT Global and UK One product set. Their history is working with large enterprise organisations, which they still do today. But because the BT product set is so varied, they now also provide services to SMEs, including schools and universities. Also, if you're an existing BT client, Network Union could review your products and potentially help you out with upgrade bandwidth or reduce your costs, even if you're a midterm kind of through your BT contract. So if you're still in the BT contract, it's not a case of switching or anything like that. If you're a small business, for BTN listeners, Network Union will provide you with the latest BT small business deals. They'll explain all the products and options from call packages to mobiles to business broadband plus. If you already have a BT business broadband account, again, same as before, they can help you look at upgrades to fibre or speed increases, and even if you're midterm through your contracts, same as I mentioned before. What you need to know is that you do not contract with Network Union, so don't worry too much about that. They effectively a BT agency, so whether you're a new client or an existing client, all support billing contracts and all that kind of stuff is still provided end-to-end by BT. Now, to become a BT business partner, Network Union had to demonstrate expertise in their niche in connectivity design. They have developed workflows and specifically diagnose the requirements of a client, including applications, strategy, budget, all that kind of stuff. They're experts at all that kind of fantastically awesome stuff. All this is available to you with no added fees or margins. In fact, Network Union are very good at achieving excellent business BT commercials on your behalf. So whether you work for a large enterprise or you're in a small business, Network Union review and propose BT services. By the way, if you're in the US, they're also working with a US telecoms company to offer similar service, so it's worth checking them out either way. So please click on the Network Union logo via BritishTechNetwork.com and into the sponsors link. So BritishTechNetwork.com/sponsors. You'll see Network Union there. All this kind of information I've just given you, if you want to read it over again, it's all in there. Click on the link in there. Please go through the British Tech Network site. Don't go straight to Network Union because we won't get the kudos for sending you there. But please go to Network Union via the sponsors link, and they'll chat to you over the phone, equally happily meet for a coffee or anything like that. They're great, great guys. So happy to have them as part of our sponsor suite at British Tech Network. So thank you very much, Network Union, and fantastic. So Alan, what you had a story mainly around the features of the new update that you wanted to chat about.
Yeah, sure. thought it was topical and timely. Indeed. To go through what was in the recent Windows Phone updates and Nokia updates, which most people should have got by now, from that sort of from that early January rollout start. So the updates for most people will have come in two parts. One part is the general development release 3 Microsoft package of patches and feature updates. Mm-hmm. I mean, this one, it is a maintenance and future-proofing update, so there's not huge, huge features in it, but stuff to keep it up to date and enable new devices as well as some more features. So, for example, allowing for a third row of medium tiles to support more than 5-inch, you know, phablet devices, mm-hmm. and full 1080p resolution. Being able to go forwards with supporting Qualcomm's quad-core processor. Windows Phone is actually really light on hardware requirements, so it's only more recently they've gone to dual-core processors, but theoretically it can support up to a maximum of 64 cores with the shared Windows 8 infrastructure in the core.
Wow. I'd say all that core stuff just makes me go cross-eyed. I have no idea about hardware.
But customers like, you know, more cores is better, isn't it? It's the megapixel race all over again.
Yeah, possibly.
But yeah, I think it'll be a while till we see 64 core phones. We'll see. They brought in a driving mode, uh-huh. which basically enables you to sort of, when you tell your phone what your car Bluetooth is, you can then choose not to take text messages and phone calls. That's and quite cool. Ping people back automatically.
Okay, so that it detects the particular Bluetooth thing and then performs a whole bunch of actions off the back of that. That's quite cool.
Yeah, so you just tell it what is your Bluetooth device that, well, presumably you're telling it it's your car, but theoretically, I guess if you've got a Bluetooth device at your work desk, you mm-hmm. could tell it that and put it in driving mode for you not driving.
That's quite cool.
That is kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah.
What a great way to make sure you're not getting distracted when you don't want that to be happening.
Yeah, and it's entirely your setup, and you choose whether you just want to receive phone calls or block text and phone calls, and whether you want to auto reply with something and some things like that. So
yeah, that is cool. That's cool. A friend of mine does that. He uses a Note, I think it's a Note. I might be wrong about that. Anyway, has NFC, and he has one of those little NFC stickers in his dashboard. I think I mentioned this in the Big Show a couple of weeks ago. And he swipes his phone across that as he goes into the car, and that shuts down Wi-Fi, puts Do Not Disturb on, switches off the screen, I think, as well, or puts it very, very dim anyway, fires up his, Spotify or something like that. So he does it all through this NFC chip, and then he apparently has one in his front door as well, which when he swipes it across that, it then connects, it switches Wi-Fi back on, and so he goes into his home Wi-Fi.
We need a car mode, don't we, in the operating system.
That would be cool. Yeah, and some sort of proximity system like you're describing.
Yeah,
and obviously, you know, you tend to want it hooked into your car's Bluetooth, so mm-hmm. that seems a sensible proximity thing, doesn't it?
Indeed.
One that Windows Phone is catching up on, you can now do quite a lot of assignments for ringtones.
Yes.
Which is important to some people.
Welcome to 2010. Well done.
Yeah. You know, as I say, it was idiotic that you couldn't actually change some of the types of alert tones, and now you can do it per contact as well as much more flexibly.
Yeah.
One that control freaks will be pleased about is you can now manually close apps from the Windows Phone multitasking screen. Mm-hmm. So you just bring up the, you know, card type view and you press the cross, just like closing an Internet Explorer tab.
Okay.
So before, if you really wanted to make sure everything was closed down, although it's all frozen and doesn't actually use up power like it might do on Android, you'd have to repeatedly press the back button until you reversed all the way out the stack.
Were you trying to bait Sarah there? Or was that accident?
No.
I'm not saying a word.
And we get into, so, and then the smaller system ones, like improved accessibility features. Okay. Not surprising, seeing it's, you know, building on the Windows 8 side of features. Mm-hmm. Wi-Fi tethering, internet tethering via Bluetooth as well as Wi-Fi now.
Okay. So does it do similar thing to how Android and iOS deal with that, where it kind of creates a Wi-Fi bubble? And you just connect it, as far as anything to connect into it's concerned, as it's a hotspot or a router or something.
Yeah, that's how it's supposed to work.
Mm-hmm.
You've got lock screen rotations. So people complaining, you know, they're reading in bed and the thing goes landscape when they want to stay portrait and stuff, but whatever. And you can use Wi-Fi when you're doing the first initial setup to obviously save data charges and go faster.
Sure.
Sure. So that's the GDR3.
It seems like a lot of those things, and I by no means am I meaning to down any of them, there's a lot of these things that seem to be kind of catching up with Android and iOS, because with the exception of the driving mode one there, I think that's stuff that Android and iOS have already had for a little while. I only comment on that purely as it's sort of the maturing of the OS, this update, do you feel, or was it like a big feature thing?
No, this was definitely a maturing and allowing some more advanced future models to come out.
Okay.
And then, as I say, you know, for people with Nokia handsets, mm-hmm. You also get the Nokia Black update. So that had, and that did dig into some new APIs and stuff that were supposedly unlocked as part of GDR3.
Mm-hmm.
So you need GDR3 to get the Nokia Black update. So Nokia Camera, which is a great camera app I'll talk about later,
mm-hmm.
Was improved, and it was also rolled down through Nokia's lower range. Before, you couldn't get it on anything lower than the 920 and their PureView models. Now it's actually available almost right the way down the range, okay. And it is a lot better than the default camera app. Glance screen. Nokia phones obviously historically had a mode where you could see details with the phone basically still asleep,
mm-hmm.
and they've gone and updated the glance screen so that now, you know, shows the time and your key statuses without actually turning the phone on.
So is that power mode? Is that I've never actually seen it, but I've heard things about the Moto X. Have any of you had a look at the Moto X? Apparently, it has a kind of a glance screen where you can show just messages just in the corner of the screen, so it doesn't use up battery or anything like that. No? Nobody? I'll take complete silence.
I should... I will cover it a bit later. But
all right, okay.
At this point, I should be able to answer that question, but I am not able to.
That's a tease, then. So
it is.
Yeah, there we go.
Foreshadow.
One that Nokia have done that seems very much let's help bring iOS and Android people across is they've come up with the app folder. You can put multiple apps inside one tile that you pin to your start screen.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, it's not something I'm interested in because Windows Phone is all about the live tiles and bubbling things up, and the app folder just acts as a container for more launchers. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But, you know, obviously there are people who go, oh, look, Windows Phone doesn't have folders. So now it has folders.
Yeah, so it's more of the maturing of the OS there as well.
I think it's definitely a marketing, oh, we have folders too.
So this next one you've listed on here is quite interesting, is the improved Beamer. So is this sort of a screen sharing type thing? Is that kind of for testing and debugging, or what kind of things do you use that for?
Nokia's sort of demo video sort of suggests more business use of maybe just over Wi-Fi, just broadcasting a PowerPoint presentation onto a screen or your photos and stuff. But it's got kind of two modes. So you can share nearby or mm-hmm. share remotely. And if you do the share nearby, basically you bring up a web page at beam.nokia.com on any browser, and it will give you a QR code. Point your phone at the QR code, and that instantly creates a link between those two screens. And everything on your phone screen, real time, gets mapped onto that. So you can do it on internet TVs,
mm-hmm.
Supposedly in set-top boxes, Or you do the beam remotely, in which case it gives you a URL to send by text message or, you know, email or etc. Mm-hmm. And they click on that and it shows them.
Cool. So have you tested this at all? This seems like it could be quite interesting.
Yeah, I had a play with it the other night. I mean, you know, you're not going to be sharing full motion video on it.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, it works fine, and you know, it is exactly as you see on screen, so it does try its best to show you as much of the animations and swipes as you're going between the start screen, launching apps, all that lot. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you know, the response speed of it was definitely acceptable if you're, you know, showing photos, showing a PowerPoint, or just trying to guide someone around the OS, really.
That sounds quite interesting, actually. I was approached at work the other day, just asked if such a thing actually exists. It was what they were trying to do was what they originally asked me was because I plug my iPad into this 42-inch HDMI telly via an HDMI port, I should say. Does that telly become touchscreen?
That's a fantastic upgrade. Patent that now.
But I managed to kind of talk them around and explain why that just wasn't going to work. But doing something like this actually might have helped them out a little bit, because basically they didn't want to go away and buy an Apple TV, because that was my next suggestion, because they didn't want to have a. There was all sorts of different things involved, and an Apple TV was going to be the best solution for them. But they didn't want to buy that. But something like this might work, because we actually have Surface. We have one Surface as a test device in the office. And something like that's quite interesting, that you don't actually need any other hardware. You just need a web browser running on a machine.
Yeah, because obviously, cool. You know, there's so many things have a web browser in them. Mm-hmm. As I say, you know, I don't know. I assume you probably need a web browser that can handle at least a modicum of HTML5 to do it. But, they say it's pretty pretty wide-ranging what devices it will support on the other end.
It's interesting. I'm quite keen to test that. I'll maybe have a look at that. But thank you very much. That was quite a good rundown. Yeah. Of the new things. I certainly didn't realise that some of this thing worked and some of this stuff wasn't in Windows Phone, so it's quite interesting that they've arrived. Very cool.
I was just going to, the last bit I was going to say was just sort of a teaser of what's coming next for Windows Phone, mm-hmm. Which is because we've had some leaks, as everyone does, indeed. Particularly Microsoft. So the next big set of updates for Windows Phone is actually Windows Phone 8.1.
Yep.
Obviously trying to get closer and closer alignment between Windows Phone and Windows OS itself. Mm-hmm. So it's expected that Microsoft will at least tease or officially announce some features at Mobile World Congress, mm-hmm. you know, 24th, 27th of Feb.
Yep.
If you are signed up with that Preview for Developers app, you might well find the Windows Phone 8.1 landing on your device in April. Cool. When they release it at Microsoft Build is the strong suspicion. But they reckon the carriers won't roll it out to non-developer released handsets till July.
Okay. So what's the big thing in this one? You know, what's the big secret that they're going to bring out to 8.1?
Well, do you remember Cortana from the Halo games?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So allegedly there is going to be a virtual voice assistant based on Cortana Halo, yeah. And as I say, there's stuff like VPN support for enterprise users. There's enhanced Bing search, more like you find in Windows 8.1, where it sort of searches the device plus the internet plus everything else. Supposedly, the Xbox Music and Xbox Video parts of the OS will be broken out into separate apps rather than in the OS core, mm-hmm. so they can be aligned more with the Xbox yep. system and keep up to date with that, and improved deeper integration for Twitter and Facebook in the People Hub. But lots of rumours still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, very good. Well, that's grand. Thank you very much. Sarah, what's your story?
Well, I know we've touched on it, but the Lenovo purchase of Motorola was fascinating. I mean, it was completely out of left field.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
I think given that when Motorola were bought by Google, it was it $12.5 billion or something like that?
And 12.5 or 12.8.
Yeah, and I know that they only got it was 2.91 million in the end. And at the first deal, it looked like, what on earth are Google playing at? But it seems that all the patents and everything were excluded from that deal. And I think that the devil is in the detail with this. And I heard a great saw a great cartoon of this, which was I can't remember exactly what was it. I think it was something along the lines of someone going into a store and buying Motorola, and then the assistant saying, "Let me bag that up for you," and they bag it out. And when they walk out of the store, and they realise all the patents are missing. So it was the thought that maybe that Lenovo didn't quite know they didn't quite get exactly what they were expecting, or they were expecting more for the deal. I don't know. I mean, obviously, none of us are going to know.
Yeah.
But it wasn't what we first thought when this was first came out on Wednesday evening last week. But on the whole, I mean, for me, I as some of you may know, the Moto X was due for release in the UK last weekend, mm-hmm. on Saturday, and I was by now I should have had a Moto X. I was expecting to actually go out and buy one today. That was my plan.
Okay.
But as soon as this deal came along, no, completely knocked it on the head.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
And the reason for that is, as you know, people that listen to me on the big show will know, I still have a Nexus S, which was 3 years ago, was the Google phone. And I made a decision a long time ago to move off contract phones and just to go out and buy the phone, because in the long run it's cheaper. But for me, it has to be a vanilla Google experience phone. I will not touch a phone unless it's got that. So because we don't know, and you know, I'm looking at a phone that's going to last me for 2 to 3 years. So it has to be a vanilla experience, because I want to make sure that I'm getting the latest version of Android as soon as it becomes available, mm-hmm. for Google. It's really important to me. And I don't want all the rubbish that the carriers and the manufacturers put on the phone. And so I understand Samsung even make it virtually impossible, if not impossible, to remove that stuff now, which is just making me even more certain that this is a really important way to go. So this deal with Samsung and Google for 10 years, I'm hoping that everything I've heard about the fact that part of that negotiation was to, okay, let's start, you know, stop going down this route of annoying people and putting your own stuff on it, because you're basically watering down the Android experience. Mm-hmm. So you can understand why Google would get upset about that.
Yeah.
So I'm really hoping that what we're going to now have is Lenovo and LG and Samsung all developing phones, which they're not going to put this on, because Google are going to provide them with a good service in terms of Android updates and features and stuff like that, which are going to help them sell the phones. I might be being completely utopian, but if they are, then it's brilliant. If not, I'm going to have to find another way of dealing with it. In fact, possibly become a Windows user.
Is there any news on when the Moto X will appear?
Well, as far as I know, it's still. I didn't see anything other than the fact that it was scheduled for release last Saturday.
Right.
And I probably will wander into a car phone warehouse at some point and have a play with one. But I'm not going to buy one, because obviously this deal has somewhat put what's going to happen with the Moto X brand on doubt. So now I feel I'm in the situation where I've got to wait until see what Google's plans are, and you know where the next Google phone's going to come from, if there is going to be one, because obviously we're now hearing that the Nexus brand is going to be killed, which also affects, because I've got a Nexus 10 tablet.
Right.
So okay. It's like, you know, when it comes to buying my next tablet, which, okay, I've only had this for nearly a year, is I don't even know where that's going to come from as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I sat down with a friend of mine last week, it was about middle of last week, and she said, okay, what tablet should I buy? We couldn't find anything better than the Samsung Galaxy Tab 3 10.1 because she wanted the 10.1 factor. The other thing that's really important for me is removable is changeable battery.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And that's one of the things that stopped me from buying a Nexus 4 because I was looking at that as an alternative because it was a good, pure Google phone.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my colleagues at work had got one, and it doesn't. You can't change
no,
the battery.
You can't.
I'm finding out from my Nexus 10, and I've only had this for 10 months, and already the battery is starting to go on it.
Right, okay.
I hate being dictated to in terms of the manufacturers. And Apple are the absolute worst at this in terms of saying, you know, when the battery goes, you will replace this device because you can't do anything about it.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, out of all the parts in an iPhone, the battery is probably one of the easiest to replace. But I take your point.
Yeah, but you want it so that you can pick up the phone, take the back off, pop the battery out, and put it in. Even if you've got to do it on a plane or whatever, if you're changing sims as I do when I'm going backwards and forwards from Ireland. It's just really important, and all these things where they don't do that just get in the way. Plus, and I know I'm having a bit of a rant here. Sorry,
rant away, rant away.
The other thing that's really important for me is recyclability.
And, you meaning as in passing it on to a family member
or
something like
that?
Well,
not just that, but also from a point of view of I don't want, you know, in terms of the thing not ending up somewhere, making it easier to recycle and having batteries that are soldered onto the boards or whatever. Just makes it even worse. And this is one of the things I was disgusted at with Apple when they started doing this. But anyway, I won't get onto the recycle thing. That's for another show, maybe another day.
I find the whole Apple battery thing to be fascinating because before the iPhone came out, every phone the battery came out of.
Yeah,
and when the iPhone rolled out. I remember hearing so many people say, well, this phone's dead. It won't ever make it because you can't swap out the battery. And since then, the iPhone has become incredibly successful. And pretty much every other manufacturer is making at least one phone where you can't replace the battery. And it's these are the same companies that were bagging on Apple for – having a non-user replaceable battery, it's just fascinating to see how one company will bag on another company, but then turn around and do the same thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it is a creeping trend where these batteries can't be replaced. Fortunately, Samsung are really good. And most of their devices do actually have replaceable batteries on them.
Yeah, so I carried an S3 for a few months last year when I was working on an Android project. And I have to say, I really liked the S3. But the big thing that I had a problem with was the plastic back. To get into the battery is relatively, I'm not saying very, relatively flimsy plastic back that one of the little clips fell off of when I was changing the battery once, coincidentally. And and that was it. I had to go away. I mean, as it turns out, I actually managed to find a back on eBay for it was like £4 or something like that. So it wasn't the end of the world.
I was going to say you can change the backs quite easily.
You can, but I think that's the difference. Is the with Apple products, you maybe can't change the battery, but you know I'm not worrying about cracking the plastic back on my phone either. I think it's the trade-off. I'm not necessarily saying one's better than the other, but I think that's the trade-off, is that I really like having a very slick, very self-contained, beautiful Apple device over having something that's got a plastic back that the clips kind of fall off now and again. You can replace them, but there's the convenience element there, so I think there's a trade-off there.
There's always a trade-off.
Yeah, exactly. So finally, Jeff, your story this evening, what are you going to thrill us with?
Well, okay, so it turns out that Apple has a new lawsuit against them.
Wow.
Patent infringement lawsuit. I know, I know. Good thing you were sitting down, everyone. This one, though, I find to be kind of interesting
mm-hmm.
because it comes from a group called the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation. So
know them well.
So anyhow, the people that are part of this foundation, they have this patent that that describes a way of constructing a from a logic standpoint a computer processor.
Okay.
And they're saying this is exactly what Apple has in the A7 processor that's inside the iPhone 5S and the iPad Air. And I guess now the Retina iPad Mini. And excuse me. And so it's called table-based data speculation circuit for parallel processing computing, which doesn't mean anything to me. But apparently it does to the guys that hold this patent. And they invented this and got it patented when they were as part of their jobs with the University of Wisconsin. And they've had this patent since like the late 90s. All right, so now we have a little background on this patent. They're not filing this in Marshall, Texas. Now, for people outside the United States, that probably means nothing. Mm. But for those of us that follow patent lawsuits within the United States, that's a huge thing because the U.S. District Court for Texas in Marshall is known as a patent troll friendly court.
Okay.
So all of these patent trolls, these patent holding companies that want to sue people with their frivolous lawsuits, they go there and they file a lawsuit there because they have a higher likelihood of winning.
Oh, right. Okay. I didn't realize there was a particular place that was the easiest way to deal with that.
Yes. Ah. Yeah. And it's in Marshall, Texas. So when you see a patent infringement lawsuit involving Apple and the article's written by someone in the United States that understands how the system works, they're going to tell you which court it was filed in because it actually makes a difference in as far as the credibility of the patent holder. Okay. And in this case, it's filed, I believe, in Wisconsin somewhere, which would totally make sense. Mm-hmm. And it's something that Apple has mentioned as prior art in the past. So Apple has now shown that they are aware of this patent, and we have these patent holders that are saying, yeah, not only are they aware of it, but they're actually using our technology without licensing. And they're targeting the iPhone 5S, the iPad Air, and the iPad Mini with Retina display because of that processor. So it's possible that these researchers are in a position where they may have a legitimate complaint. And if so, Apple needs to start throwing money at it to fix the problem. Otherwise, they will find themselves in a position where there are courts saying, look, you now have an injunction. You can't sell devices with an A7 processor.
Okay, so the relevance of them not filing in Marshall, Texas, is that because they're being gentlemanly and so they're going with their local court system? Is that what we're saying? And they don't want to just go for the easy route because they feel that this is a slam dunk? Is that?
No. Gentlemanly never comes into play in the United States with the legal system. Trust me. So this is more about the overall legitimacy of the complaint.
Okay.
If you're someone that's a legit patent holder, as opposed to a patent troll, someone that's just acquired a bunch of patents,
so
they can turn around and sue people to make money. Mm-hmm. Then you're more likely to file a lawsuit of this type in the jurisdiction where it's actually relevant.
Right. Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And a patent troll, they're going to set up shop in Texas so that they can file in Marshall, because all they want to do is make money off the patent.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
And
okay.
What these guys want to do is protect their technology, protect the technology that's covered in the patent.
Yeah. And I think that's legitimate. I mean, with all these patent trolls that are going about, they've probably bought companies who have bought companies who have bought companies, and they've sort of ended up with the patents. But if this is actually people who have, you know, put their blood, sweat, and tears into creating this, it's only right that they defend their patent. And so I suppose that's a positive thing. But it's an interesting. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out with Apple.
I agree. Mm. My Jedi instincts are telling me this one isn't actually going to go to trial.
Yes, this will be settled.
To settle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. Interesting, though. No, I hadn't seen that one come across, actually. It's a very interesting one. Also, the acronym for the Wisconsin Alumni Research Formation is WARF.
Yes. And so, of course, as soon as I read the acronym, I immediately pictured a Klingon Starfleet
Indeed,
officer
yes.
running around enforcing patents.
Or sort of a love child between Worf and John Candy's character in Spaceballs, Barf. You know, some kind of love child there. But that would be an interesting human being.
The porn for that is just so wrong.
Oh, dear, dear. Anyway.
Let's not go there.
And in true British Tech Network style, we're moving from a discussion about porn to do a UK2 ad. So, this podcast and all the others of the British Tech Network are brought to you by the fantastic people at UK2. They're absolutely superb. I use them for all of my websites, and I cannot have any complaints. I don't have any complaints about them at all. Their support is second to none. I don't think I've ever logged a critical problem. I have logged a few high problems. Generally, my own misunderstanding of what's going on, and they've always got back to me in a few hours. Absolutely superb, and in a number of occasions they've went above and beyond what they needed to do and actually helped me out with a couple of issues myself. They're absolutely superb. We have some offer codes for you. If you want to head on over to thebritishtechnetwork.com, click on the sponsors link, which you'll see in the top there. You will also see our other sponsor that I mentioned earlier on, the Network Union, and you'll see UK2 there. If you click on the UK2 hosting link there, it's quite important that you do that, because if you don't click on that and you go straight to UK2, we won't get the kudos for sending you there. So it's quite important that you click on that link there. And if you could just go there, fill your basket with whatever you need, and then you can use all of the voucher codes on the British Tech Network website to get all sorts of fantastic discounts, 20% off domain registration, 50% off first month of a purchase, VPN and so on and so forth, servers, VPS, and absolutely amazing. I can't recommend them enough. They're great guys over there, so please support UK2 as they support us. So
once you've actually got an account there and you use it, please use it to log into your account as well, because
yes,
then you'll get even more credit, so you can keep supporting us even once you've actually bought your domains and services.
That's a very good point, Sarah. Sorry, I forgot that, and it's actually something I don't mention when I do the advert on the Gamer Show, so I'll have to remember to continue doing that. Good point. So we've now got some cool things, people. So first of all, I'm going to go to Sarah. What is your cool thing for this evening?
Okay. My cool thing is an app for Android called ES File Explorer, which is a pretty straightforward app for looking at files and stuff like that. But that's not the reason why I picked it. It does its job very well for that. As some of you may know, with KitKat, which is the latest release of Android, part of the sweetener that Google provided for airtime providers to get this out fast was the ability to block the phones from being able to provide hotspot feature facility on the phone, which is a bit of pain.
Yeah.
However, this app gets around that problem because it has its own hotspot feature built into the app. So even if KitKat and the airtime provider have decided that they're going to stop you from doing it so they can charge you if they want to allow you to do it, then you can use this to get around it. So I would recommend it purely from that point of view. Get it while you can.
Yeah, very good. Very good. So it doesn't do any kind of jailbreaking or anything like that. It's just kind of a workaround.
It's just making use of the features. And I assume that the way that KitKat is doing it, because they would have to keep to enable that feature to be possible so that the airtime providers could provide it on payment of a fee, of course, of a monthly fee. This actually makes it available anyway. And as far as I've heard, it will continue to do so on KitKat. I don't actually need to use it because, luckily, my airtime provider don't block it. Mm-hmm. But in future, who's to say that they won't?
Indeed, yes. Yeah.
It's called ES File Explorer. If you just look for that in Google, you will find it.
Very good, very good. Jeff, what do you have for us this evening?
All right, I have a simple little application that's actually really, really cool, and it's recently updated. Mm-hmm. And it's called Dark Sky, and this is for the iPhone and iPad. And what it does, excuse me, is give you current information about the weather for where you are. And by current, I mean up to the minute. So you can look and see what type of precipitation to expect. Okay. For wherever you are for any given time frame, and it will give you alerts when it's about to rain or snow, and it gives you really nice weather maps, like radar maps, to go along with what it's showing. And now that they've done this update to version 4, they changed up the interface dramatically. And at first I was like, wow, is this going to be okay, because there's no information about how to use it. But what they did was they put these clever little visual cues in. So like when you open the application and it brings up the current weather for where you are, the screen kind of does this subtle little bump to the left, showing you that if you swipe to the left, you get to see more information.
Okay.
So on every screen where you get to see where you can swipe to do something, it shows you very quickly what the swipe is, but it's a subtle thing that's not in the way. So when you see it at first, it's like, oh, great, now I know how to do this. Excuse me. But after that, it's not obtrusive.
Okay.
So I just launched the app, and it's telling me it's 25 degrees Fahrenheit right now, and that it's going to start snow flurries in about 40 minutes, which is interesting because it's sunny right now. But I'm in Colorado, so that's totally sunny. And I can do a quick swipe, and I can see that later this afternoon we're going to get 2 or 3 inches of snow. I can see how the temperature is going to fluctuate over the next 24 hours, and I'm going to have to dress warm.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can look at basic forecasts for the upcoming week. And in each day, just a little swipe will give me data about what the precipitation expectations are for that day for any given window of time. So it's a really cool little app. It's done really well. And I've just been very happy with it for a long time. And now that version 4 is out with this redesigned interface, it's really nice.
Yeah, it looks like quite a nice little app as well. I quite like weather apps. It's a little pricey though for a weather app, I would say, but it's still very nice.
What is it? It's like $3.99?
Yeah, it's £2.49 UK, £2.49.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So if it's £2.49, then it probably is a $3 or $4 application in the United States. I can't remember what I paid for it.
Yeah,
it was so
$4.
Long ago.
Yeah, $4. But no, it looks nice. And then you also seem to get kind of a map overlays, so kind of quite far zoomed out overlays of the globe as well as your current location as well.
Yes, nice. and I believe you can zoom in. Just
right,
do the pinch to zoom thing.
Okay. Yeah. Very cool, very cool. I like that. Grant, Alan, what have you got for us this evening?
Following on from Nokia Black updates, one of the key features that a lot of the mid to lower end phones get new is Nokia Camera, which is an app that they've previously limited to their 920 and above PureView cameras, and mm-hmm. Basically can fully replace the default camera app, including you can say that it takes over the use of the hardware button, and you know can also do the press the hardware button to wake straight from pocket into camera. But the really impressive things with the Nokia Camera is the amount of features and control it's got in it. So it's got three main modes. One is photography. Fine, take a picture. But there's a really nice radial overlay menu where you can basically adjust the white balance, focus, ISO, all of that sort of stuff. But you see the effect direct in the camera view. So you can actually really sort of play around and sort of pre-compose. It's also more recently got like a normal digital camera, things like automatic sport mode, night mode, things like that. You've got a video recording mode, which gives very high quality results, and you've also got sort of the trick shooting mode, which was previously called Nokia Smart Cam. Depending on your phone model, it takes between 5 to 10 photos in quick succession.
Okay.
And then you can do lots of different effects, like obviously you can replace faces to who's blinking in your photos, but you can also do it can pick out the moving object, and you can have multiple people, you know, a skateboarder sort of doing a trick, super showing on the photo multiple times, or you can add motion blurs, or you can do quite a lot of other things. Or you could just sort of, you know, if you want to capture a series of shots, you can just sort of grab them and then export them later. But the real big thing is the camera side of things and just the amount of manual control you can have. You can, you know, can do timers, can do bracketing. So, you know, you've got images ready for doing high definition range. It's got a really nice, simple tutorial. Lots and lots of features that are way beyond the default camera app.
Very cool. Very nice.
I was just going to mention it specifically because you do have to go out and download that manually.
That's not part of the black update.
It's only available on the mid to lower end handsets after the black update, but you don't get it as part of the download. It is actually an app you've got to manually go and install.
But it's free, is it?
Yeah.
It is, yeah. That's very cool. Very nice. That sounds quite cool, that. So it's basically you can apply filters before you take the shot, so you actually see what the photograph's going to look like.
It's not so much filters. It's taking the multiple shots, and then it can do some really clever things in terms of working out differences between the shots and then enabling you to do, special effects. But it's not applying filters as such.
Okay. Okay, so mine is the new app that came out from Jason Calacanis' newest app, which I believe it would have come out from an organization, but the app's called Inside. And essentially what it is it's a news reading app, or sort of an RSS app is probably the easiest way to describe it. But it's actually news articles written by people, and they're down to 300 characters. So basically they boil the story down to a bite-sized lump for people like me with the attention span of a toddler to be able to get all of the news and information that I require. It's quite cool. It's got a top news, so it just basically shows you the top news. You've then got all updates, which is just sort of a time list, just the newest ones at the top, and it slowly folds down. You can then apply topics to your feed, so you can go down a list that includes a variety of things and kind of choose Apple or Google or I don't know, food or TV or Netflix or something like that, and add that to your feed. I quite like it. I've only been using it for about a week now. It's free. I like it. It sort of does what I needed to do. I've tried many, many RSS solutions in the past, and none have quite done it for me. This seems to be working, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But for the moment, I think it's worth a shot. It's free, so really there's no harm. Very good. So that was basically our show. So thank you very much, everybody. It's been lovely chatting to you all this evening. Just before we go, I'll just quickly round the horn for find out where we can get a hold of you all. So first of all, we'll start with you, Alan. Where can listeners get anything you want to spew out onto the internet?
If it's spewing things out on the internet, it's got to be Twitter. So digital amoeba, all one word.
Right, and we'll put a link to everybody's Twitter handles in the show on the British Dead Network site. Jeff, where can people find you?
Well, they can find me at macobserver.com and Twitter what's my Twitter name? Jay Gamut. Wow. Okay. And you can find me on a bunch of podcasts like Apple Context Machine, We Have Communicators, The Big Show.
Mm-hmm. Hey, get a plug in for The Big Show.
There you
on
go.
On this network, on Indeed. The British Tech Network.
Very new. Yeah, sometimes referred to as the Jeff Gamut Network. and then go to freshbrewedtales.com because that's where I talk about the ridiculous things that I see people do in coffee shops.
Very good. And a good read that one is as well. It's quite amusing.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, no worries. Sarah, where can we find you?
Apart from other shows on this network, like particularly The Big Show, I'm a regular on The Big Show on Thursday nights normally, although it can vary sometimes. And we broadcast live as well. The best place to get hold of me other times is on Twitters at SarahJaneUK.
Very cool. And I'm at Paul Wheatley on Twitter. And you can find me on this show every fortnight and on The Gamer Show, which is basically on the alternative fortnight where we talk about video games and biscuits and other general banter. So thank you very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure. Thank you all my guests. It's been fantastic having you on. And we will see you again in 2 weeks. Thank you very much. Good night.